pitch on the way. And that is drilled deep to left field. And you can kiss it goodbye. Into Landry's Crawford boxes. Alex Bregman goes yard. And the Astros go up 2-1.
Here's the pitch. Soto swings and hits one high and deep to right. This is way back. Going. And gone. Goodbye. Into the second deck. A tremendous home run for Juan Soto. Bang! Zoom goes the magic wand.
Swing a high fly ball left field, sending Brantley back onto the warning track at the wall, looking up, and it is gone! Anthony Rendon puts it into the Crawford boxes, and the Nationals lead the ballgame 5-2 here in the seventh inning. It's Anthony Rendon's first World Series home run and his second long ball of the postseason. 3-2. And Torino skies this one. Shallow center. Backing up is the second baseman, Cabrera. Waiting for it, makes the catch, and that is the ball game. The Washington Nationals force a game 7 as they defeat the Houston Astros tonight by a final of 7-2 to even this World Series at 3 games apiece.
Yes, indeed. How about that? You know, my dad used to always say, there's going to be a game 7 because it's all about the money. And I'm wondering. Anyway, welcome and good afternoon. You've dialed us up. We're thankful that you have. This is the Jordy Helpert Show, my main man CD, back in the master control suite in the 237 Roof Studios on the campus of Delta Media, which just so houses KLWB, which is 1037 The Game, 1037thegame.com. And we are Acadiana's number one sports station. Thrilled to be here. Hope you're having a great Wednesday. Temperatures are going to start dropping later on. Should be a cool, crisp weekend, but we're hump day. We're at the top of the mountain. We're getting ready to go downhill. We have a busy show planned for you and yours. Greinke versus Scherzer. We'll have a live report from Minute Maid Park with our good friend Chandler Rome to start off this show coming up in segment number 2. To start off segment number 2 and hour number 2, former St. Thomas More superstar Mikey Matuk will give his thoughts. He played with Justin Verlander when they were part of the Detroit Tigers together. We'll get his thoughts on Game 7. Yes, indeed. But we begin with the longest wait in sports history. It's always the LSU-Alabama game. It's always a bye week beforehand. LSU defensive end Justin Thomas withdrew from school for personal reasons. Ed Orgeron said yesterday in his meeting with the media, this was a kid that was a key rusher on the defensive line in LSU's green team and their cheetah pass rush packages. The defensive coordinator Dave Aranda often uses on third downs in passing situations. Edo said, I hope he comes back next year. I don't know what the personal reasons are, but that's where we are. Coach O did talk to the media. He said, again, that it gets old. It gets old. I don't want to talk about them and them as Bama because it gets old talking about them.
Well, it can get old, you know, we're talking about them for 2 weeks. You can get old talking about them, period. You know?
Now, Coach, you've been...
them. I like that. I like that. This is a chance to get healed up. So, Coach O, what's the latest on your All-American safety, Grant Delpit?
Things will be fine. He had a little sprain talking to Jack. We expect him back to practice next week.
Expect him back to practice. So... Tigers had a little light workout yesterday. Today will be full pads. And so Coach O talked about what they're doing this week as a staff.
We had a big self-scout yesterday, and here's what we did. We had the offense self-scout the defense, and the defense self-scout the offense. And that was Coach Aranda's idea. And he asked me about it on Sunday. I said, sure, go ahead. I'm going to recruit. Y'all go ahead and do it. And today they gave a report, and it was a phenomenal report. And we found out some things about both sides of the football that we think are going to help us.
Nitpick, right? And that's good. You got to self-scout. You got to look yourself in the mirror and find out what you can do. Tomorrow they'll have their Tiger Bowl. This is a rest week. This is a recuperatory week for those guys that play and play a lot. And the Tiger Bowl is all those guys that never get in games, and their teammates, the guys that do play, get to coach them up. And it's a fun time, and then they'll turn them loose, let them go home, let them go show off at their high school football games and relax, and then they'll report back Sunday night. And get ready to go. I like it. It's not putting too much stress. Let the coaches have all the stress of the game. Let the players relax and get healthy. But Justin Jefferson kind of set the tone after the Auburn game when he talked about Bama.
They haven't seen the offense like us yet, and especially we're going to come for their heads. I mean, we're gonna do what we need to do. We're gonna continue to. To throw the ball, we're going to continue to run the ball. So we're excited to go against them, and we just want to come out with the win.
How different is this team than the one that went to hosted Alabama last year?
I don't really know the answer to that question, but we're going to be ready. We're going to dominate. I mean, there's nothing much to it. I mean, we owe them, so we're going to get to it.
I love Justin Jefferson. I love that. Joe Burrow named one of 20 semifinalists for the Maxwell Award for the Collegiate Player of the Year. The Maxwell Football Club announced yesterday LSU cornerback Derek Stingley has been named one of the 20 semifinalists for the Bednarik Award for the Outstanding Defensive Player of the Year. The Maxwell Football Club announced yesterday as well. Kalyvon Chaisson, Grant Delpit, Austin Deculus, Tyler Shelvin, Thaddeus Moss were missing from the brief open portion of LSU's unpadded practice yesterday. It doesn't really matter. They'll all be good to go. Coach O says they're going to be as healthy as they possibly can be for the game against Alabama. And the LSU Athletic Department received a graduation success rate of 89% in the 2018-19 school year, according to NCAA data, which is one percentage point shy of the school's all-time high of 90%. In 2017. So good news for them. Good news for them. Meanwhile, baseball, A.J. Hinch, Game 7. If you recall, back in 2017 against the L.A. Dodgers, it was another Game 7, and the Astros came through and won the World Series. A.J. says, been there, done that.
I don't know that there's a lot of explanation or any fancy quote that you got to give you guys or them. We got a great opportunity tomorrow to play a home game, Game 7 of the World Series. Maybe not how we drew it up in terms of how we got there, but it doesn't take away the opportunity we have to win the World Series.
AJ, have you ever seen anything like this, all these road teams winning in this series?
We're waiting until the last game to have it on our side. We worked really hard to get home field, and we're happy to play at home. We have no problem playing at home. This place will be rocking tomorrow. We've won a ton of games in this ballpark. This series has been very weird. If I'd have told you the series was going to be 3-3 going to a game 7, I don't think there's a person in the building that would have assumed that all road games or road teams were going to win. We just got to make sure that last one's not the same.
There you go. I get, you know, baseball has more unspoken rules than the law allows. I think it's all hogwash. Alex Bregman hit a home run, and somehow, some way, he carried the bat all the way to first base. And apparently that's not a misdemeanor. That's a felony when it comes to Major League Baseball. Breggs kind of apologized after the game for it.
I just let my emotions get the best of me. And it's not how I was raised to play the game. And I just let my emotions get the best of me, and I'm sorry for doing that.
Breggs, you don't need to apologize. That's part of your bravado, big guy. Yeah, no apologies necessary at all. Soto carried it. Did you see that home run from Soto? What a superstar he is. My God, that thing is still traveling. He carried the bat to first base, kind of a mocking gesture to Bregman. But, hey, all's done, all's forgotten. Davey Martinez is happy because he's got his man, Max Scherzer, on the hill for the deciding game.
Max is starting tomorrow. We got him up knowing that, you know, if the game is tied or we were up a run, we might have to use him. He wanted to go down there and just throw and get loose. We scored some more runs, and I immediately shut him down. You know, I felt very comfortable with Dew and Huddy and Strauss right there.
There you go. So, game seven. That's all you need to know. Game seven. With that in mind, we'll take our first break. We are brought to you each and every day by ShopRite Tobacco Plus Discount Outlets, 60 of them in southern and central Louisiana. Everything you need under the sun. Cleanest restrooms. It's a beautiful store. If you can't shop right at ShopRite, you just can't shop right at all. And if you're not a Buku Rewards member by now, well, you're missing out on unbelievable deals every day at ShopRite Tobacco Plus. Just go online and take you 10 seconds, and the savings will be coming to you in Buku manners. Yes, the Buku ways. Become a Buku Rewards member. ShopRite Tobacco Plus Discount Outlets. It is the best. We'll go live to Minute Maid Park, as we have done throughout this series. Chandler Rome of the Houston Chronicle will give us the X's and O's, the Jimmys and the Joes next.
The Blonde Bomber is back and better than ever as you're locked into the Jordy Hultberg Show on 1037 The Game, 1037thegame.com, and on the free mobile app.
Game seven, best two words in sports. And tonight we've got one as well-documented. Minute Maid Park, winner take all, Astros and the Nationals. Chandler Rome has a front row seat for each and every game. He'll be there tonight covering it for the Houston Chronicle. Kind enough to join us today. Are you nervous? How are you feeling about this game seven, big guy?
I'm just kind of happy it's going to be over either way. I've been grinding nonstop the last month and a half, and I need like one day just to do nothing, and I think tomorrow will finally be that day, win or lose tonight.
I don't know. You may be getting some champagne poured on you if things go well. It seems like Zach Greinke kind of let loose a little bit. He was smiling in the locker room afterwards, talking about the game. He said how excited he's going to be. What did you get from Greinke, and what were his biorhythms? What kind of sense did you get his feelings are about this one?
So when you say Zach Greinke lets loose, I mean that there's a low bar to be crossed there. He's very distinct, and he doesn't show a ton of emotion. But as opposed to maybe some other times he's spoken, he showed a little bit more personality. This is certainly the biggest game he'll ever pitch in his life. Same goes for Max Scherzer as well on the other side. Yeah. Game seven of the World Series. I think Greinke and how he performs is one of the two biggest keys in this game. Greinke hasn't finished five innings. He's only finished five innings in one of his playoff starts this year.
Right.
He's been hit around a good bit in every start. He's just so happened to wiggle out of jams very well. He's been able to make the big pitch when he has to. And that's something at home that the Astros have not done in this World Series. They've not been able to shut down innings. They've not been able to strand base runners. They've really, you know, given up the two-out, two-strike hit with two guys on base, things like that. They're going to need Zach Greinke to continue that trend. And they're going to need the bullpen to really step up, whether that's Jose Urquidy pitching a few innings, whether that's Garrett Cole coming back on 2 days' rest and throwing an inning or two, whether that's Roberto Osuna and Will Harris going one-plus. Because I don't see Zach Greinke pitching into the seventh inning like Justin Verlander and Garrett Cole did.
No.
You know, I see this being, if he finishes five innings, I think the Astros would be thrilled.
Yes.
And then after that, they're just going to have to stick together.
I mean, in his last two games, he was replaced, even though he'd given up just one run, to your point, through five innings. So you've got to expect something like that. So I guess the big question is, and I remember Madison Bumgarner in a similar scenario that Garrett Cole is in, where the manager in a World Series, you know, he pitched on 2 days' rest. He comes in out of the bullpen in relief. The manager says, give me one inning. He ends up pitching five and wins the darn thing. Do you expect Cole to come in right away and under the same pretenses? Hey, Garrett, just give us one inning, and then we'll go. But if you look good, we're going to keep you in there.
I think it really depends on the score. I mean, I don't think they're going to burn Garrett Cole on short rest in a game that they're losing. I think if they're tied or ahead, sure, you could see him. And I think by then it'll be really be dictated on field. I mean, you mentioned it right there. If he goes out there and is throwing 98 and is getting swings and misses and looks really good, then, yeah, they'll ride him. Now, it should also be noted that Garrett Cole's never pitched on short rest in his life. Not in college, not in high school, not in pro ball, nowhere. So this would be really unprecedented for him to, A, come out of the bullpen, and, B, pitch on short rest. So I don't know if you could really expect a ton from Garrett Cole tonight, but the Astros are sure going to try, and you know he's going to want the ball. You know he's going to ask to go down and warm up as soon as he's able. So the usage of Garrett Cole and how long he goes will really be dictated on how the game's going and how Cole looks.
There's a bunch of old-timers out there that are going, let Cole start the dadgum game, because there was a guy, a lefty back there in the old days, back in 1965, by the name of Sandy Koufax, who on 2 days' rest pitched a shutout to win the 1965 World Series. That's not going to happen, but I could see him coming in. But look, the bullpen, you know, Will Harris only pitched through five pitches on Tuesday. So you've got Harris, Smith, James, Osuna, all a full go on Wednesday, so the bullpen's in good shape.
Yeah, and certainly you have to feel confident that Roberto Osuna hasn't thrown since game three. Will Harris made a bad pitch last night, and Anthony Rendon hit it out, but other than that, yeah, he's been phenomenal all postseason. Josh James is a little bit of a wild card. He can get out of his delivery sometimes and walk some guys. I'm not sure how much they would trust him in a huge leverage situation tonight. I really think tonight it's going to focus on four pitchers out of the bullpen. It'll be Harris, Osuna, Urquidy, and Cole. I think anybody else you see would probably come in a complete matchup-centric situation or gotcha, if the Astros are trailing.
So why are the Astros struggling to score at home? And look, I know the easy answer to that is they face Scherzer and they face Strasburg twice, and Strasburg was unbelievable last night. How do they break out of this thing with Strasburg? What is their approach at the plate?
Well, I think the main thing is they're going to need to see how healthy Max Scherzer is. This is a guy that 2 days ago had to have his wife help him get dressed. He couldn't get out of bed on his own because his trap and his shoulder and back were so locked up. But he's taking cortisone shots, and he threw yesterday and was actually got up in the bullpen as if he was going to come in the game yesterday, but they sat him down, and he said he's felt fine, and you know, if he goes out there and he's throwing upper 90s and he's the healthy Max Scherzer, that's a difficult matchup for the Astros. But they certainly did well in game one. They worked his pitch count up to about 114 pitches through six innings in game one, and that's what they're going to have to do. They may not score a ton off of him, especially if he's healthy, but they need to work his pitch count up. And like you mentioned, the Astros have some starters in the bullpen, so do the Nationals. The Nationals are going to have Patrick Corbin, they're going to have Anibal Sanchez in their bullpen ready to go. So the Nationals came in with a far worse bullpen than the Astros, but I don't think that matters tonight because they have two of their starters down there. And then, you know, Steven Strasburg, who says he can't come in and face a bad Astro? I know he threw 110 pitches last night, but I mean, this is game seven of the World Series.
Yeah.
If he feels good and he can give you a batter or two, then why not?
Chandler Rome, Houston Chronicle, game seven tonight, 7:08, first pitch right here on 103.7. It seems like the unsung key for the Astros is to get four or five runs on the board early, just like they did in game seven of the 2017 World Series at Dodger Stadium. So that lets Greinke pitch from ahead, and it creates a buffer against that Nats offense. These guys just don't go away. Neither team says, you know, dies, because the Astros were down 0-2. They went out and won three straight. And then the Nats, with their backs to the wall, they come up big and they win game six. So neither team goes away. But it just seems like when the Astros get on the board early, they're a much better club.
Yeah, I mean, but you can also say they scored two runs in the first inning yesterday. And then
that's true,
did nothing for the next eight innings. So, I mean, I think it is important to score in the first inning, and they've done that in this World Series. They've scored eight first-inning runs in the World Series. It's just pitchers are going to make adjustments. Pitchers are going to alter their stuff after seeing the lineup one time. And the Astros have to adjust that. They had pristine opportunities yesterday against Steven Strasburg, runners in scoring position, and had the guys they want up in Altuve and Brantley in the fifth inning. And Altuve strikes out on three pitches, and Brantley lines out into the shift. I mean, the opportunities are there. They're just going to have somebody get a big hit, whether that's Alex Bregman, Michael Brantley, Yordan Alvarez in the six hole. They just need somebody to be clutch.
If you're into numbers, and some people are, the home team is 19-20 in World Series winner-take-all games, including three straight losses, though. Before that, the home team had won 9 in a row, and 7 of the past 8 teams to force a World Series Game 7 on the road, as the Nationals did Tuesday night, went on to lose the series. So we shall see. But this is the first series, Game 7, that will feature former Cy Young winners as opposing starters. So how do you see this thing going? Take away, you know, who you cover. Just as a baseball fan, what do you foresee here?
I have been wrong predicting every game of this World Series. If you'd have told me they'd have lost the first two games at Minute Maid with Verlander and Cole on the mound, I'd have laughed at you, but they did that. I kind of thought that the Nationals, going back to play in D.C. for the first World Series game in 86 years, I thought they'd at least win one game, and that didn't happen. And then I thought coming back last night with Verlander on the mound with a chance to win a World Series in Houston that the Astros would win. So I don't know what to think. I have no idea what we're going to see from Zach Greinke. I have no idea what Max Scherzer is going to do. This is probably the most – I have no clue. I think this will be like an unsung hero type of game. Somebody that we're not talking about right now is going to come in, either a pitcher or somebody at the bottom of either order is going to make an impact and kind of change the narrative of this game. Because right now, a lot of people just around the game, they don't know what to expect from either of these starting pitchers, from either of these lineups. It's been such a weird World Series. Last night was really the first game that was, I hate to say good, but last night was really the first thrilling game.
Chandler, I know this. You'll have a day off tomorrow. Go enjoy. And thank you for your time.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Chandler Rome from Minute Maid Park. Back with LSU Football Talk. Chris Truax next.
There's only one place you'll find all the movers, shakers, and Tigers newsmakers. And it's right here on the Jordy Humpert Show on 103.7 The Game.
Well, if you're an LSU fan or a Saints fan, you got the weekend off. Now, Raging Cajuns, you want to go to Cajun Field and watch them play in their homecoming game. But if you're not interested in that, I got a place for you to go to spend your weekend. How about heading down to Hackberry, Louisiana for the perfect RV park that's located in southwest Louisiana, catering to all Louisiana Natural Gas Lodgers. They've got world-class fishing, hunting, and bird watching. Of course, we're talking about True Lodging RV Park. Reserve your spot. Call 337-287-0631. 337-287-0631. Sportsman's Paradise, right there in Hackberry, Louisiana. Time to talk Tigers in the trenches with my main man, Chris Truax, offensive lineman for the Tigers back in the day, coach college football offensive lineman, and just a really good guy. CT, how are you, buddy?
I'm good, brother. Happy Halloween, man.
Oh, what's the costume this year?
Well, you know what? I broke it out last week, and Fred Flintstone all the way.
Perfect. Yeah, I mean, wait a minute.
I mean,
that is absolutely perfect.
Well, you know, you ain't got to be the options, Jordy, in 4XL, so you got to take what, you know, you got to take what they can give you. You know what I'm saying?
You're the best. Sum up that game against Auburn. But that was a back in the day throwback kind of a just physical, tough college football game.
What a fantastic ball game. And that's why you play at LSU, and that's why you play at Auburn, to have those sort of matchups. Jordan, it all comes down to, honestly, penalties.
Yeah.
Okay. Auburn had 15 penalties. I don't know. Yeah, I think about eight on offense, I think 7 on defense. Kept LSU's drives going. They cost them a touchdown. You know, Auburn kept beating themselves, and hats off to the LSU Nation, the family that were out there supporting. That stadium was on fire Saturday night. You know, I think Auburn had like 4 or 5 false starts.
False starts, yeah.
Yeah, and those are drive killers, man. I mean, yeah. You know, you're not in the playbook. It's not, it's first and 10 section in the playbook. It's not first and 15, first and 20 section in the playbook, yeah. You know? And so I really think that the crowd really affected the outcome of the game as it should. Auburn's a dynamic program, the best team we have played to this stage in the season. Yeah. Yeah. They've got the best defensive line. I really think they have the best defensive line in the SEC. I think our guys played really well.
Yes, they
but
did.
As a unit and some depth, I think Auburn's got better than Alabama's as well, too. So, but our guys battled, and it was a hard-fought victory that we're glad to be on the winning side of.
You've been on the offensive line against really good players. That Derrick Brown, from your perspective, that's a bad dude.
You know what I love about seeing these guys? You know, we sit high up, but we're away from the field. But, man, when they're big far away, you just imagine how big they are up close.
Yeah,
you get the binoculars on,
and
like, oh, my God. You know, we beat Auburn in the Earthquake game 7-6, and they had Tracy Rocker and David Rocker that would – you know, line up over me, and I'm thinking, oh, I'll get a break. You know, he's going, oh, geez, here comes the better one anyways. But that was a football game, and Auburn's got nothing to hold their head down about.
Yeah.
You know, their quarterback's a freshman quarterback who, unfortunately, we're going to be seeing that guy for a few years.
Yeah.
And we've got a legitimate Heisman Trophy guy playing quarterback, which is going to give us an opportunity to win every Saturday.
That's the difference in the game, just the quarterback position. I really firmly believe that. It was announced by Coach O yesterday that defensive end Justin Thomas has withdrawn from school for personal reasons. That's a pretty big blow as far as I'm concerned. He was coming along, and he was your best rushing defensive lineman in that green team and that cheetah pass rush package that Aranda liked so much.
I agree. You know, George, these guys got so much on their plate away from football,
yeah.
Be it personal issues, family issues. You just don't know if he lost the passion for the game or frustrated that he wasn't getting really a true starter. He was just kind of a package guy. And, you know, he's got to do what's best for him and his future. And if he thinks leaving and going somewhere, that just when these guys leave, doesn't matter what position, doesn't mean you're going to go somewhere else and play or be the guy. Sounds good on paper, but these kids a lot of times get a reality check when they think they leave LSU. And, you know, it's for the war of purple and gold that I can show up over at McNeese or Northwestern or Southeastern and be ready to go, because they've got good players too, just more limited numbers. So, hey, it's recruiting. LSU will get the next guy up, and hopefully that guy will, you know, enjoy being a Tiger, because these guys are – I was by the facility, a matter of fact, yesterday, and that's the first time I'd really seen the nutrition center, and, you know, it's just –
nice.
It's fabulous. If you hadn't been by there yet, I mean, go by there and just you know, because the nutrition center's for all the student-athletes. And I met somebody up front. We were just having a discussion, and but you got a chance to kind of look in from the lobby area, and it's state of the art, man, and that's what college football is all about, especially now too, with the NCAA saying, we can True Lodging can use your likeness, and he can pay you for this, and all that kind of stuff, right?
No, that's my gig. You don't be giving that to a football player. That True Lodging, that's my gig. That's paradise in Hackberry, Louisiana. Chris Truex, kind enough to join us. So. We talk about this all the time. I'm of the belief we shouldn't have a bye week prior to the Alabama game. It's just too much of a buildup. I'd rather have one after the Bama game. But that being said, how do you handle this week? Coaches tend to – it's called paralysis by analysis. They sometimes they overdo it. They know too much. And they throw that on the kids, and they bombard them with that, and then they become zombies out there. Has LSU learned their lesson? Is Coach O doing the right thing this week?
Well, you know what? That's always been, LSU's mantra, and I believe Alabama's mantra as well, too. Look, we're going to both be open before we play each other. And, you know, with nowadays with the recruiting rules and restrictions, when coaches can go in, coaches can go, you know, be on the road or I know LSU got a big commitment from a kid this week as well.
Yeah.
But there's an opportunity as coaches, you know, we used to say, hey, don't chase ghosts, you know. It is what it is. It's all about matchups. I mean, people are going to know your scheme. What are we going into week eight? Week nine. They're going to know your scheme. They're going to know your personnel. They're going to know your special teams. So now it's just kind of about matchups and who's healthy. Our guy's healthy. Is Tua healthy? It's not that complicated. You know what Nick said, but Nick ain't all about tricks. You just line it up and having better people than you're going to have.
Yeah. You're right. Chris Truex, kind enough to us. Who'd have thunk? Just remember, it was only about 8 years ago in 2011 when they met as 1-2. That was a 9-6 game. Both offenses were, limited because the defenses were so good. And now the offenses are so good. We ain't going to see no 9-6 game, my friend.
Jordy, I tell you what, we hadn't scored on Alabama in 2 years. I'm holding my breath on this, okay, because I will jump up and down. I might even do a high kick or something like that if we can cross the end zone, all right? I think we do what makes Alabama uncomfortable now. In the past, we'd load the box, all offensive linemen, two tight ends, a fullback, and say, here we come, and we couldn't do that. Now I think we're working on the Alabama's. I tell you what, our tempo, our style, and our philosophy that really gets. I mean, we're in a lot of calculated, just high completion throws. And I think St. Hilaire has done a tremendous. Yeah. I wasn't a big St. Hilaire fan early on, but I tell you what, he has really established himself as a true starter at LSU and really one of the premier backs in the SEC.
Yeah, he's and I'm not saying he's on this level by any stretch of the imagination, but he's got a little wiggle like Barry Sanders, and he's a left-hander with some power like Emmitt Smith. He's got a little bit of both in him, and you're right. He's been the surprise for LSU, and it's like he sees those freshmen coming in, these highly acclaimed freshmen. He goes, it waits your turn, big guy. I've waited mine. Now you got to wait yours. You're not taking this from me.
I love it, and he deservedly so. And the best thing about him, we've talked about this earlier in the year, the guys come out of the backfield being able to catch the ball. He can do that. He's got great. He just got a great understanding of the game, and I'm glad that he's playing at such a high level right now.
We talk about winning the line of scrimmage. LSU did against Auburn. They did against Florida. You know, everybody says Alabama's not as good defensively, but I gotta see it to believe it, right? Because they're always good defensively. They don't give up many points. So it's going to be tough sledding. There's no question about that. Nick's too good, and you just don't beat them. You gotta step on their throat and kill them. I hate to use that analogy because they're not going to give up.
No, then they always play great against us, you know. But what we're doing now offensively, because you think about it, they have seen the same offensive philosophy coming at them for 8 years in a row, what LSU does and what LSU's identity now. Now, they have never played an LSU offense ever in the history of LSU. Has Alabama ever played a style of offense like that LSU is showing now? And the young man we got back, the big wide receiver, number 6.
Marshall.
Good Lord, I didn't realize he was such a big guy, man. Ooh. And the long, high points the ball. So, I mean, we've got some tremendous weapons out there. And, of course, with Coach Ensminger and Coach Brady and with Coach O, I mean, I wonder if everybody in Tiger Nation is happy now that we have Coach O and not Tom Herman or Jimbo Fisher. What do you think?
Yeah, that goes without saying. You're absolutely correct. You're absolutely correct. So, I mean, 8-0, it's right there for the picking. I mean, just golly sakes alive. Oklahoma losing does us Oklahoma losing does the SEC a big favor. All SEC fans are going to be pulling for Oregon to lose because I'm telling you, there's a great chance for two SEC teams to get in the Final Four.
Jimmy, I don't know how it couldn't happen. I don't know too much about Ohio State. I know Oregon's playing well out there, but still, Oregon's got a couple of losses. Ohio State doesn't have any losses. You know, it's us, Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State, and then, I guess Clemson right there in the top four. I don't know who Clemson has left on the plate, but obviously, Alabama's got LSU and Auburn left. Mm-hmm. After Alabama for us, we've got, what do we have, Ole Miss, Arkansas,
We got Ole Miss, Arkansas, and A&M.
Yeah. So a lot of things can
happen.
Good. I mean, I wouldn't have thought that, you know, Oklahoma would have lost to K-State last weekend. But
no.
I just think, you know, either one or two or whatever, if they're really saying who are the best football teams in the country, well, LSU's in that discussion. Win or lose, I mean, obviously we all want to, all, you know, but
look,
I just think LSU is their premier team.
No question about it. I got to believe that Wilma looked pretty good next to Fred, right?
Fred Always Flintstone. Love the redhead. Always.
So I won't give your address, but I got to believe at the Truax house, there's some good candy being given out.
Let me tell you something. Nothing but five-star candy. And if it ain't chocolate, don't bring it.
Well, I will. I'll get a chance to see you Saturday. We got to go to a wedding, don't we? Holy cow, that's going
to
be
looking forward to it. Yeah. A good old buddy of ours, Brian Jones. You know,
taking
a leap of faith for the third time. God bless it.
Jeez, enough of that, Chris. Enjoy the off week, my friend. It's always fun talking to you, and you got to send me a picture of Fred Flintstone. That's an all time classic.
Perfect. You got it, brother. Go Tigers. See you this weekend. Thank you, man.
All right, Coach. Bye-bye. Oh, Chris Truax, brought to you by True Lodging RV Park in Hackberry, Louisiana. They've got everything you need there. It's first class. Everything you need for your RV, they've got it. They cater to the natural gas lodgers, world-class fishing and hunting and bird watching, all the amenities, restaurants and stores nearby. It's just a fun place to kick back, relax, and do absolutely nothing. True Lodging RV Park right there in Hackberry, Louisiana. Give them a call, 337-287-0631. 287-0631. Get away from everything at True Lodging RV Park in Hackberry. Back to wrap up hour number one. We'll set the stage for a very special guest coming up in hour number two. After this, this is the Jordy Helfrich Show, 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com.
All the best guests join the Jordy Helfrich Show. If you missed an interview, you can check it out on demand at 1037thegame.com. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back to the Jordy Holtberg Show right here on 103.7 The Game. CD with you right now. Kind of having a little technical difficulties at the moment. Jordy Holtberg kind of having some little technical difficulties on his end. Hopefully we can get him back sooner rather than later right now on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. And, you know, definitely has been a wild last few days when you just look at everything going on in the world of sports. But, of course, it's all about what happened last night in the MLB World Series. And, of course, it all comes down to that one play that really wasn't entirely all that consequential outside of maybe one moment in particular. When it comes to, obviously, Anthony Rendon's home run that kind of clinched the Game 6 ball game, but a lot of controversy surrounding a long delay in the seventh inning. And Joe Torre talked a little bit about that long delay and why it happened.
It shouldn't have been that long. I don't know if it was the noise or whatever it was. I know we had a hard line in our box, and we had trouble reaching people because we tried to make some calls. We couldn't do it. It should never be that long. That's unfortunate. And certainly, you know, we have to take ownership of that. But it shouldn't have been that long.
It really shouldn't have been that long. And when you just think about a lot of the Astros fan base, they're probably thinking a lot of that lengthy delay definitely hurt a lot of the rhythm that, you know, a guy like Will Harris was having. Will Harris has definitely got into a solid rhythm all postseason long, and you have that long delay. No pitcher is really kind of ready for that kind of situation because, you're allotted a certain number of pitches in your warm-up, and then you have that delay that takes up a whole bunch of time to determine the call on that wild play in the seventh inning that Trey Turner was out due to batter's interference. It was the right call, and Joe Torre kind of emphasized that here.
He interfered with the first baseman trying to make a play. In fact, Gurriel's glove even came off at that point in time. He did run to the fair side of the of those 45-foot line. The violation was when he kept Gurriel from being able to catch the ball at first base. It's a judgment call on the umpire. Sam Holbrook made the call. It's the right call.
And it was the right call. It just definitely was unfortunate that we saw, obviously, the pitching staff for the Astros not be able to kind of keep this thing competitive, because after that you saw a two-run blast from Anthony Rendon, who definitely was the MVP of last night's game. And now we move on to game number seven that's be going on tonight. You'll hear it right here on 103.7 The Game. Interesting stat popped up on the Twitter sphere earlier today, and I gotta say, this is awesome. 249 days ago, the Astros opened up spring training with an exhibition at West Palm Beach. And today, they'll begin Game 7 and end the season with Game 7 of the World Series. And it looks like we'll try and finish off Hour 1 in style here. Me, myself, and I, a little De La Soul style. And we'll talk about that and a whole lot more. Hour number 2, we'll do some hot topics for you on this wonderful Wednesday afternoon. Definitely a little wet one, but we'll kind of get you updates and see if we can get Jordy Holtberg back on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Of course, at 3:15, we will have on former LSU Tiger Mikey Motsuk talking about the major leagues and the World Series matchup. Of course, he played with Justin Verlander back when he was part of the Detroit Tigers. I'm talking about Justin Verlander, who has definitely been absolutely fantastic throughout this postseason. But the World Series, that one win he's looking for, his first win, cannot. It keeps eluding him, and we saw it again last night. He had things getting going, and it was definitely very, very frustrating to see the Astros star player could not get it done. But, of course, hour number one in the books. We'll keep it rolling on. Hour number two coming up next, 3:15. We'll have Mikey Motsuk on. Hopefully, we get Jordy Holtberg back, and we'll do some hot topics with him. If not, I got a lot of other things planned for you. And we'll keep it rolling on in just a little bit. One more time, just a timeout to wrap up hour number one. When we come back, we got a whole lot more to get to. You're listening to Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
Live from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette. This is Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Touchdown, New Orleans!
Streaming live on the 103.7 The Game mobile app and online at 103.7thegame.com.
He struck him out, and the Tigers have won!
This is the Jordy Holtberg Show. Get involved and call 337-706-0111. Follow along at 103.7 The Game on Facebook and Twitter. And now it's time. Here's your host, Jordy Holtberg.
Not quite Jordy Holtberg. It's CD, of course, right here on 103.7 The Game. Kind of doing a little fill-in work after all. Jordy Holtberg having some technical difficulties over in BR. We'll try and get him back on, hopefully, for 3:15 when we have Mikey Motsuk on the program. I know we'll definitely have him ready to go at 3:30 when we talk with Mike Huguenin, our Hump Day with Huguenin segment. And trust me, you're going to want to listen to that because they talk a lot about what's going on. LSU on a bye week, but still a lot of great matchups, a lot of great storylines to kind of break down on a Wednesday afternoon, a soggy one of that, a lot of rain hitting the Acadiana area and hitting it hard over the last, let's say, a few hours. And this has popped up kind of in the last 10 minutes or so. That's involving the Louisiana Raging Cajuns. They just announced a new strategic plan. I love the name of it. Let's Go. And it's definitely more of a roadmap for coaches, staff, and student-athletes. It was created from a seven-month-long process with input and guidance from student-athletes, coaches, staff, faculty, Raging Cajun Athletic Foundation members, and community leaders. And it's a three-year plan that has a newly established vision and mission statements to basically be a nationally prominent D1 athletics program that promotes, as they put it, a culture of excellence for our student athletes, coaches, and staff, definitely with the emphasis on the UL capitalized, as Billy Napier kind of has brought that phrase over. I think everybody loves that. And it's going to be fun to see what happens with this program and how things are going to look. And their guiding principles are integrity, service, authenticity, inclusion, and excellence. You can check out the whole thing. RagingCajuns.com has a whole PDF about it. It just kind of got popped up earlier today, and definitely going to be something to kind of look at, especially when you look at the fiscal and facility management priority, and that's their second priority when you just look at everything. Because obviously the plans are to enhance what's going on at Cajun Field in the near future, and I think once they kind of get this whole fiscal situation under control, that's when we start seeing the moves being made to make sure that when you look at Cajun Field on Saturday nights, it looks to be that place that you want to go hang out at and watch the Raging Cajuns take on anybody they're going to be facing off against. Not just for when you're playing in-state opponents like Southern. You want to see teams like App State, like other programs, Arkansas State. The list can go on and on. They want to see the marquee matchups, those games. They're going to be up on the marquee. I'm looking forward to seeing what happens there. And again, I guess it's just because of the fact that I've always wanted to see the Cajuns succeed. I think with Dr. Brian Maggard and everybody else involved in this, they are going to succeed and then some. I think a lot of it also has to do with the fact there's a lot more, I'd say, transparency with what they're trying to do. Is again, I mentioned this was not just a discussion amongst all the higher-ups, like the director of athletics, Joe Savoy, everybody else involved in that. This was an entire thing. They wanted everybody involved, even student-athlete representatives, such as Lexi Como representing the softball program. A lot of other players and coaches are in on this. And I'm looking forward to seeing what's going to happen with this program over the next few years, because I know this has been the goal for a long time, to get this team to be a prominent Division I program, at least in the eyes of their fan base. Because, again, we've seen what they can do with their baseball program. The baseball program and softball have been established for a long, long time. They're able to occasionally get really good crowds into the Cajun Dome for basketball games. Again, depends if it's an in-state opponent or not, and if the Cajun basketball team is red hot. But somehow, some way, football, especially the last couple of years, has fallen through the cracks. And again, that's definitely a national debate, another conversation for another day. But it's something that you need to look at, especially if you're the Cajuns, be able to start building your reputation back up in front of a fan base that has definitely got, at least on the football side of things, has become a little bit jaded because of the fact of what we saw for years in the Hudspeth era. But I think we're going to see even more improvement in the not-too-distant future when you're looking at the Louisiana Raging Cajuns and the developments they're going to be making with their football program. You're going to see better attendance, because I think once we get this new and improved Cajun Field up and running, it's completely operational. We see all the stuff. You've seen the mock-ups. You've seen everything they've done. I think they're going to make a huge step in the right direction for the Louisiana Raging Cajuns, and that means it's going to be a great thing for the brand of Raging Cajun Athletics as a whole, because you'll see everything work better for the program. I'm not here to say what they need to do to improve attendance, because I think there's a lot of things that need to be taken care of if they want to do that. That's going to be the big thing. That's what's causing all this. But I'm looking forward to seeing what's happening right there, and of course we'll see kind of the first steps of that hopefully this weekend when you look at the Cajuns when they take on Texas State this Saturday in a homecoming game. By the way, you can enter in to win a pair of tickets to go see the Cajuns take on Texas State. And all you got to do, it's simple. You text Cajuns to 68683. That's Cajuns to 68683 for a chance to win a pair of tickets to see this Saturday's game. And trust me, it is going to be a fun one, because Texas State, they're not that team that had a hard time getting wins in the Sun Belt Conference. First year head coach getting it done. I'm looking forward to this matchup a little bit more than maybe I was, let's say, week one or week two. When I just looked at the schedule originally with Jake Spavital as the head honcho, I was saying this team was probably going to be hitting towards like the middle of the road. They're not going to be a team that is an absolute world beater and a conqueror of worlds. Not by any means. They wound up being very competitive against Wyoming early on in the year. A big blowout loss to Texas A&M to start. Then you played SMU, who is very, very good. A definite college football or New Year's Six contender in the SMU Mustangs, currently ranked 15th. They beat Georgia State, who looked to be on a roll, one of the best teams in the Sun Belt Conference, the most improved. I think you definitely give a little bit of credit towards Texas State for what they've been able to do. Ark State destroyed them 38-14 last Saturday. Now they're going to be getting ready for a big one against the Cajuns. And I think I got to give the I'll give the edge to the Cajuns still because I feel like this team has had ample time to get ready, to get warmed up to the thought of getting back in action and being able to return to the field in a big way on Saturday afternoon, 4 o'clock kickoff. It's a big homecoming matchup, and the Cajuns are going to have their hands full, especially with the Texas State defense, who gave Billy Napier and crew fits last year. But still, it's a lot like what we saw with App State a few weeks ago. This Cajuns team has never lost to Texas State. It's almost a reversal of roles, and I think we'll see Texas State lose another one, but it'd be a lot more one-sided of an affair. And, of course, we got a lot of other things to get to. Mikey Mata going to be joining us in just a few minutes, about 5 minutes. So hopefully we can get Jordy Holtberg back on. A little bit of a technical difficulties on this Wednesday afternoon live, as always, from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. And, hey, guess what? We got a lot of other things to talk about. And one other thing I want to bring up is, without a doubt, probably what everybody's talking about nationally, is Baker Mayfield kind of storming off during a press conference or media meeting with some people earlier today and walked out on his media session after getting into a testy exchange, and he cited a penalty for derailing the drive, which ended on a short third and long pass as time expired. This was against the Patriots last weekend, and that was a lopsided 27-13 loss. The score doesn't show how bad that matchup was. When you look at what the Browns did against the Patriots, several early turnovers wound up costing them the ball game. And we're going to, looks like we're not going to be able to get Jordy Holtberg on for the next segment, but we'll definitely have him on at 3:30 to talk with Michael Huguenin of The Athletic, and then we'll kind of wrap up the show in a nice little bow. But again, going back to what's going on with the Cleveland Browns at this point, and Baker Mayfield is definitely fallen down towards the bottom of those rankings in the AFC North. Because at the beginning of the year, this team had all the expectations. I'll admit it, I was one of those guys that jumped on the bandwagon of one Baker Mayfield, but he is definitely underwhelmed. 2-5 on the year. He's thrown an interception in every game this year and is tied with Jameis Winston, the turnover machine, for the most picks in the NFL this year. And he'll be taking on the Broncos this Sunday. I think they need to wind up turning it around, but Baker Mayfield's starting to fold underneath the pressure at least a little bit. I'm not saying he's the absolute worst player since Johnny Manziel. Not yet. He's shown himself to be a solid player, but I think he needs to have like a moment where he can kind of check himself and figure out what he needs to do to get better, rather than, you know, have a guy like your boy, Freddie Kitchens, kind of ruining a young quarterback. Because I think Freddie Kitchens is done, in my opinion. It's going to be a one-and-done type year. You try and get somebody really, really good and probably be a younger guy from the college ranks to be able to build him up and become that quarterback whisperer like we've seen guys like a David Cutcliffe over at Duke or even a Dan Mullen over at Florida, much more of a larger scale, especially when you look at what he's done with Dak Prescott, Nick Fitzgerald, and even, to a certain extent, Felipe Franks. Sadly, Felipe Franks got injured early this year. Kyle Trask has looked good at times for the Florida Gators. They're going to have a big game this coming Saturday against the Georgia Bulldogs. That's going to be a lot of fun. I'm just looking forward to seeing what's going to happen with all these teams and who moves forward. But, of course, Jordy will talk with Mike Huguenin about that in just a little bit. And we'll take a quick timeout. When we come back, we'll have on Mikey Mattuck. You heard me right. Mikey Mattuck, former LSU Tiger, former St. Thomas More Cougar. We'll talk to him next. And we'll talk to him about this World Series game number 7, how huge it is, what it was like playing with Justin Verlander, and a whole lot more. You're listening to the Jordy Holtberg Show. CD with you as we kind of try and get Jordy Holtberg back on the airwaves right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
Here's three pieces of advice to live by. Never play cards with a guy whose last name is Estate.
don't spit into the wind, and always get your sports talk from the Jordy Holtberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Welcome back to the Jordy Holtberg Show. Clint Dumming doing some fill-in work. Jordy Holtberg, technical difficulties. We'll try and get him back for the next segment. I feel like more likely than not we will get him back on the airwaves. But right now we're going to go over to the Artco Equipment Hotline to talk with a former LSU Tiger and also from St. Thomas More, a former Cougar in his own right. And that is Mikey Matuk. Talk a little World Series baseball, game number 7 going on tonight. Mikey, how's it going?
I'm good, man. How are you?
I am doing fantastic. And first things first, obviously, you've played for the Detroit Tigers. You played alongside a guy like Justin Verlander. What kind of guy is he like in the dugout?
Man, he is the ultimate competitor. He takes a lot of pride in his craft and what he does. And when it's his start day, he just kind of he puts his headphones on the minute he walks into the clubhouse, and it's kind of laser focused, and he doesn't really talk to anybody. And then other days, his non-start days, he's active on the bench, paying attention, helping guys out. And so he's the ultimate competitor, and he's a guy that you want to play behind. He's a guy that you want on the mound.
And you would just see everything that's happened with him, especially in the World Series. It feels like uncharacteristic to see Justin Verlander underwhelm on such a big stage.
Yeah, he hasn't pitched terribly. It's not like he's been giving up, a ton of runs, but, he hasn't pitched the same way he's pitched through the course of earlier in the postseason or really this whole season. And, I think that's a testament to the offense and the people that are facing him. And so they're putting together some really good at-bats. Especially last night, they grinded through the at-bats. He had 0-2 on a bunch of different guys, and they battled back to full counts and fouled some balls off and worked some deep counts, and he ended up getting out the game after 5 innings. So I think you credit the opposing teams and the opposing offenses for doing that to him.
Talk right now with former LSU Tiger, and that is Mikey Matuk right now on the Artco Equipment Hotline. And, of course, just looking back at how things have gone for the Houston Astros at this point, and now it's Game 7. It's full circle, which is crazy to think about. They started off spring training playing against each other in an exhibition game, and now Game 7, the last game of the 2019 season, it comes down to these two teams. Who would you give the edge in this Game 7 to, especially with Scherzer on the bump tonight?
And before the postseason started, I kind of made my predictions, and then my predictions didn't really go as I planned. And then I said the Astros were going to win the World Series. And, just watching the way these 7 games have played out, or really the first 6, I think I'm going to have to go with the Nationals on game 7. I know a lot of people in the area aren't going to be happy with that pick, but they have Scherzer on the mound, and they have a full bullpen. Corbin's coming out the bull. They have everybody available. And, I think they have a little bit of the momentum, and they've won all 3 games they've played in Houston. So I think, it's Game 7, anything can really happen. But if I had to make a pick, I'd pick the Nationals.
And I think that's definitely a strong pick, especially when you look at what we've seen from the young stud in Juan Soto. The man has definitely kind of made a name for himself in this World Series. Only 21 years old, just turned 21 during the World Series. It's just crazy to think how much he's grown over the course of the series.
Yeah, he's. Last year he was unbelievable. This year he's taking the next step, and then obviously this postseason, legends are really made, legacies are really made in the postseason. So he's put on a show, and he's last night he had a home run on a 96 mile an hour fastball at the up and in part of the strike zone. So he's a special player, and he's the pressure and the big moments. Haven't really gotten him. He's actually embraced those. So it's been pretty fun to watch. And then obviously on the other side, you have Anthony Rendon, who's been amazing. And he's probably going to be the National League MVP, and he may be the World Series MVP after last night's game.
I'd have to agree with you, especially after last night's game. Absolutely was feasting. And, of course, you went to LSU. There's a lot of notable players that went to LSU who are now in the MLB. Obviously, Alex Bregman, a big highlight. You just look at everything that he's done. You look at, obviously, DJ LeMahieu, one of the two guys who are strong candidates for AL MVP, depending on who you talk to. What's it like to kind of have that brotherhood of former LSU players all across the majors?
Yeah, it's amazing. And then, you have Will Harris with the Astros, who has one of the best relief ERAs over the last 3 years. in all of baseball. So you have all these guys that, you know, come from LSU, and it's just kind of a testament to the program they have there. And, you know, you go to LSU whether you play with a guy or not, you have some sort of connection, and everybody comes back home, and you work out, and you get to be around these guys. So it's a special program, and it's just a testament to the type of program that's been built at LSU.
Exactly. It's been a program with a standard of excellence unlike any other, especially when you were there. Bregman was there. Definitely has always been a consistent contender over the years. But flipping it over to you, obviously, you know, you spent the last few years between the Tampa Bay Rays and the Detroit Tigers going up and down. But I want to kind of take it back a little bit. Whenever you got the call that you were going to the show, what was that like for you?
Man, when I made my debut in 2015, and obviously every baseball player's dream is to, you know, make it to the major leagues and reach that level. And I was, you know, I was coming off a really good season in AAA the year before. It was my first year in AAA, and went to spring training with hopes of making a team out of camp, and then I quickly realized I probably wasn't going to do that, and it was just going to be a matter of time. So the season started, and I got called up after our first game of the minor league season. So I finished the game, and my family was actually in town. We were in Georgia, and they told me I was going to go meet the team in Miami, and it was just, you know, a bunch of emotions, a bunch of hard work, and it was just, you know, it was nice to have my family there. So it was something I'll never forget.
I can about imagine something you'll never forget, and kind of just looking forward to you. What's going to be going on with you next year? Obviously, this season, not necessarily the best way you wound up going. Got designated for assignment earlier in the year, and then went down to the minors. What's next for you?
So I'm a free agent right now. You know, obviously I'm still fully intend on playing. I'm gonna have you know, some different opportunities and different offers. So at this point, I'm just, you know, training and working out and you know, just getting ready like I normally do, and then figuring out my best opportunity next year and you know, picking a team and going from there.
And if you had the choice, which team would you love to be a part of? Like, just wondering.
That's a hard question. For me, you know, I just really want the opportunity, the team with the best opportunity for me, really. It's not, you know, I don't have one particular team that I really, really want to play for. I just want to play for a team that is going to, you know, believe in me and give me an opportunity to go out there and compete and help them win games. And, you know, ideally you want to be on a team that has a chance to compete and win and make a deep run in the postseason. But ultimately, I just want an opportunity to compete and help the team win.
I think that's what everybody wants, and I think you'll definitely get that opportunity down the road. Mikey, thanks so much for coming on. We need to have you on a little bit more often. Definitely, it was a lot of fun. Enjoy Game 7 tonight.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm here whenever you need me.
All right, that was Mikey Mottuck. Appreciate him coming on the program. Obviously, I think Jordy would have had a lot more fun with him, had a lot more conversations to talk about, but I'm just absolutely glad to have on a guy like Mikey Mottuck, who is just great interview, as you heard, great story, kind of how his career started with the Tampa Bay Rays, went over to the Detroit Tigers, was able to spend a little bit of time, not necessarily like a whole season with JV, but it was able to see how he works and how he does things. And I feel like that was just an interesting look and also a fun look at game number 7 for the World Series winner take all. Something I think a lot of us expected, but maybe not the way it happened and how we got to this road. Because I don't think anybody expected to see the man himself get it done. It's wild to see what's going on with the LSU Tigers that are out there. We talk about Will Harris, DJ LeMahieu, Alex Bregman. The list can go on, especially when you look at a lot of the guys that are going to be making their way up. I mean, the National, we didn't even bring up Andrew Stevenson, who didn't make those ALCS and World Series rosters. Hopefully he can make his way up there. Because I feel like he's a great talent. He's really shown himself to be one of those good guys that has made his way up to the system in a relatively fast fashion. A lot like what we saw with Alex Bregman. We didn't even bring up Aaron Nola, a great NL pitcher who I feel like he's got an opportunity to really do some great things. Just needs to be a little bit more consistent, at least from my point of view. But it'll still be a lot of fun to see what happens coming up tonight, Game 7. And you'll hear it all right here on 103.7 The Game. We're going to go ahead and take a quick timeout on the floor. And when we come back, we'll have Mike Huguenin's Hump Day with Huguenin. We'll wrap up the show in style. The final half hour of the Jordy Holtberg Show coming up in just a little bit. Be back with more after this.
Guess what day it is?
Guess what day it is?
It's time to break down the biggest storylines in college football this week with Michael Huguenin of The Athletic. What's up, Michael?
Mike. What day is it, Mike?
Hump day!
Always the best day of the week because Michael Huguenin of The Athletic joins us to talk about college football. Michael, what's the Halloween costume this year?
I have no idea. I don't do that kind of stuff, man.
Okay. What's your go-to candy?
I like Snickers bars, but we're giving out five different kinds of candy. So it's worth a trek from Louisiana to our house.
We're going to stop at your place, and we're going to go to Tim Legler's up there in Connecticut and see his haunted house. So we'll be all over the place. All right, crazy weekend of college football that took place. Oklahoma goes down, but I'm curious, as you watched LSU-Auburn, the most watched game of the weekend by far, what your thoughts were on a day when LSU didn't score 50 points but still found a way to win.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, Auburn's defense gave up a lot of yards but not a lot of points. Mm-hmm. And that's the second time that they also gave up a goodly amount of yards but not a lot of points to Florida. Their offense is not very good. Bo Nix is a true freshman quarterback who looks like a true freshman quarterback. So I got to think that once LSU got to 20, frankly, LSU coaches were pretty confident because the Auburn offense really struggles. I think Auburn did a nice job. They made Joe Burrow get off his mark a couple times. Mm-hmm. They hit him a couple times. That is a really good defensive front. But and on a weekend where you had two top 10 teams lose, you had Oklahoma inexplicably lose, you had Notre Dame fall that margin was incredible. They got destroyed by Michigan. Any top 10 team that wins at this time of the year should be exceedingly happy, because now I would argue that now it truly starts to matter once it gets to November. You don't want to lose in November. Now, granted, the LSU-Alabama game is going to be a loser, but those teams are both so highly ranked. But I'm really intrigued to see if Oklahoma can come back from that loss. And I know the final margin was 7, but if you watch,
it looked bad. Yeah.
They got outscored 41-6 during the stretch of that game by a Kansas State team that got hammered by Baylor and lost to Oklahoma State. So Kansas State did some things that Oklahoma could not stop, and that's pretty mystifying as to why.
Looked like the old Oklahoma defense to me. Yeah. All right, let's go on to some meaningful games this week, starting with Thursday night. A couple of undefeated teams are hosting games. Number 12, Baylor at home, taking on West Virginia. And then from the Sun Belt, number 20, App State, still undefeated, is hosting Georgia Southern. Talk about Baylor-West Virginia for me.
Yeah, Baylor plays really pretty solid defense. They're a team that's in the Big 12 that's led by their defense, and that's obviously pretty rare in that league. Their offense, Charlie Brewer's a pretty good quarterback, certainly nothing close to elite. It's a well-coached team that plays really good defense. They are more talented than West Virginia. Don't see a way West Virginia wins unless Baylor coughs it up 4 or 5 times, and I don't think that's going to happen.
Is Matt Rhule one of those coaches? I mean, it's in his third year. It's amazing. It's amazing what he has done at Baylor. Could that be a guy, okay, I'm leaving here, I'm going somewhere else eventually?
Yeah, NFL. I think that he is – it's interesting that here's a guy who was coaching at Temple a couple of years ago. NFL teams have noticed. That's one positive aspect of working at The Athletic. You hear a lot of scuttlebutt from a lot of different people on both levels. And Rhule is well thought of in the college coaching community, and there's a handful of NFL teams that like him as well. His style seems to be somewhat old school NFL in that, hey, my team's going to play good defense, we're going to hit you, we want to run the ball, that kind of stuff. And that appeals to most NFL teams, frankly. So he has done a really good job. He's definitely going to be in the running for National Coach of the Year, considering what Baylor was when he got there. It's interesting that Baylor and SMU, obviously programs that were down for vastly different reasons. I mean, now, SMU's been down for 30 years, but Dykes, Sonny Dykes is National Coach of the Year candidate as well. But Baylor, they really do play pretty good defense. It's a pretty remarkable story what Matt Rhule has done.
Here's Michael Huguenin of The Athletic. App State, number 20 at home, taking on Georgia Southern. No troubles there?
I don't think so. Appalachian State, I think, has a really good chance of being the Group of Five team that gets to the New Year's Six, just because I don't think they're going to lose. The Sun Belt is not as strong as the AAC. You got SMU right now as the highest-ranked Group of Five team, but the AAC is good, and SMU's got a couple chances to lose. Boise already has one loss. They can easily have another. San Diego State's a one-loss team that nobody's talking about. They rely so heavily on their defense, though. At some point, they got to score some points, and that's a problem for San Diego State. But, you know, App State's got a first-year coach, Eli Drinkwitz, doing a pretty good job. And I think they are going to be unbeaten. And Appalachian State in a New Year's Six game would be incredible, frankly.
I'm with you. All right, early Saturday, number 23, Wake Forest. They're climbing up the national rankings. They have a home matchup against NC State. The Demon Deacons have just one loss on record, a three-point upset at the hands of Louisville a few weeks ago. What about Wake?
Wake's well coached. Dave Clawson really is a high-level coach. He was the offensive coordinator for 1 year at Tennessee. Did not go well. I don't think he liked his 1 year there. And the Vols fans certainly did not like Dave Clawson. I think Clawson's one of those guys who, if he was at a bigger school that was in the spotlight, I'm not sure he would be as good. I think he does a phenomenal job at Wake. This is a program that, you know, when Jim Grobe did it too, Jim Grobe had Wake Forest in the BCS. This is the kind of school that has to sort of build to 1 year, and they have to hit big. You know, they're drawing on 16. They're going to get a five. Oh, my God, we're going to win the ACC. That's the kind of year it takes for Wake. This is a year they've been building to. They got experience up front on both sides of the ball. And their quarterback, Jamie Newman, is really good. He was injured. He missed the Florida State game. And they still beat Florida State, which is sort of an indictment of Florida State, I think. But Newman is a good quarterback. They have some really good receivers. The Surratt kid is incredible.
Yes.
Defensively, they're not much, but they have way too much offense for NC State. NC State has a pop gun attack, and Wake Forest brings out the howitzers.
May not be a game on everybody's radar, but last Saturday, Les Miles and his Kansas Jayhawks, part of one of the wild – it was a typical Les Miles game, a wild finish, a huge mistake by Texas Tech after a botched field goal led to a second chance, and the Fighting Miles win it. Here comes Kansas State, a big rival, coming off their shocking upset over Oklahoma. Can Les Miles do it again?
Yeah, this is an interesting game. You wonder if K-State sort of fat and sassy, hey, we beat Oklahoma, oh, Kansas is horrible, that kind of stuff, and you're dealing with 18-, 19-year-old kids, and who knows what's going to happen. K-State should beat Kansas, but the job that Miles has done and the job that his staff have done is pretty remarkable. The Stanley kid who's quarterback in Kansas, he's a senior, he's been around forever, he's a Florida kid from Vero Beach, playing really good football, not making mistakes. They have a couple of good players. Defensively, they're not much. But, this is a game that has it's an interesting Kansas-Kansas State game for the first time in forever, frankly, and that's because both coaches in their first year have done better than expected.
I agree, Toad. Never expected that from Les, but good for him. Okay, let's go out to the Pac-12. Washington did nearly enough last Saturday to take down Oregon. Now they face yet another top team when number 9 Utah comes to Seattle. This smells upset to me.
Yeah, huge weekend in the Pac-12. You got Utah at Washington. You got Oregon at USC. USC's passing game is really good, and Oregon's defense all of a sudden not playing very well. Utah-Washington. Utah has the best defense in the Pac-12, exceedingly well coached. And the one game they lost to USC because USC threw the ball all over them. You look at Washington's receiving core, though, not that scary. Hunter Bryant's a really high-level tight end. Jacob Eason has a cannon. The receiving core as a whole, though, I would argue pretty underwhelming. I know Pro Football Focus, for some reason, has them as like a top 15 receiving core. And I'm thinking, dude, have you watched the games? they don't have anybody that scares you. They have no true deep threat. Their one guy who has been productive with the deep ball the last couple weeks is a guy named Jordan Chin. He has four career catches, but two of those four have come in the last two games. So I think Utah is going to win. Zach Moss is a really good running back. Huntley is a good quarterback. And I think the determining factor is going to be Utah's physicality. Washington prides itself on being physical. It's not as physical as Utah. And the Oregon-USC game, again, Oregon's secondary the last two weeks, the last two weeks. 2 weeks ago, Washington threw for almost 300 on them. Last week, Washington State did throw for more than 300 on them. And USC has an exceptionally gifted receiving core. That game, I actually think Oregon has a better chance to lose than Utah. But Oregon is in the playoff hunt now, thanks to those losses last week by Notre Dame and Oklahoma. So it's rare when there's a weekend where the Pac-12 is sort of must-watch TV. But I would argue that this week in the Pac-12 is must-watch. You got Oregon-USC on Fox, and you got Utah-Washington also on Fox. So it's a good day in the Pac-12 on Saturday.
Every SEC fan is pulling for Southern Cal, right? Because, I mean, they want two teams in the college playoff.
Right.
And I think Oregon getting bumped off, that would certainly behoove them.
Yes, and I think they should be pulling for Washington as well. Because if Oregon's sitting there with one loss, or Utah is sitting there with one loss, that would have meant Utah would have beaten Oregon in the Pac-12 championship game. And those teams are steadily moving up. Florida and Georgia playing this weekend. One of those teams is going to fall out of the picture. So, yeah, if you're an SEC fan and want two teams in, you're pulling for Washington and USC.
Making a surprise comeback, Michael Hugenin of the Athletic. UCLA, I mean, all of a sudden, from the abyss, this Bruin team appears to be playing some pretty good football. They got two wins in a row against Stanford and number 24 Arizona State. Chip Kelly's squad has a chance to keep things going at home against, I don't know what you get, a tricky Colorado team on Saturday.
Yeah, I think the problem with UCLA, the quarterback is not guaranteed to play. Colorado is sort of team inconsistent. They look really good 1 week, really bad the next. Steven Montez is a pretty good quarterback, and UCLA's defense is not good. But you're right, UCLA, I mean, people were like, oh, my God, this Chip Kelly experiment, it's horrible, horrible hire. And then all of a sudden, you're right, UCLA has sort of reawakened. And technically, they're still in the Pac-12 South title race. They're not going to win it. But it's a pretty cool story. And that offense, when it gets going, is really still highly enjoyable. Like it was at Oregon, because they got a bunch of guys making plays. They got the quarterback doing all the RPOs. They got receivers running wide open. And UCLA the last couple games has looked like, hey, we're finally comfortable with this offense.
Here's Michael Hugenin of The Athletic. The AAC gets the national spotlight in Memphis. ESPN's College Game Day going to Memphis. It's number 15 SMU at number 24 Memphis. It's the primetime game on ABC, SMU undefeated, a legitimate shot to make a New Year's Six bowl game, but this is going to be their toughest and their biggest test to date.
Yes, Memphis is a better defensive team than SMU. Plus, this will be my presumption is a rare Memphis game that if it isn't a sellout, it'll be close to a sellout.
Yeah.
So it is a big deal. College game day's there. Memphis is a strong team as well. They're well coached. Brady White's an okay quarterback. I think he's way too inconsistent. The Gainwell kid is a really good running back. Memphis pumps out running backs now like they pump out music. I mean, they lost two really good players who are both in the NFL at running back, and they haven't missed a beat with Kenneth Gainwell. So this is a gigantic game. And the AAC is pretty darn strong. Cincinnati, UCF, Temple, SMU, Memphis, Navy, Tulane. These are good teams. They're all, for the most part, pretty darn well coached as well. I actually think Memphis is going to get them because they're playing at home. Shane Buechele needs a huge game, and the SMU defense needs to play better than it has been.
The spotlight of the college football world, in my opinion, is going to be in Jacksonville. Number 8, Georgia against number 6, Florida. They both kind of taken similar paths this year. They both lost on the same Saturday a few weeks back. Then they bounced back with some big wins over lesser SEC squads in Week 8. Now they're both coming off a bye, and one more loss likely means the end of their playoff aspirations. From a coaching perspective, who do you give the nod to, Kirby Smart or Dan Mullen?
Well, I think it's a case of it's Kirby Smart. It's Mullen versus Shirelles, and it's James James Coley versus Grantham. Georgia's offense has, for whatever reason, it's stuck in a rut here. DeAndre Swift is good. The Georgia offensive line is good. And when Georgia's running game gets cranked up, they're a tough team to beat. But if you force Fromm to throw it, that is not a scary receiving core. Right. It is sort of hard to believe that with all the great recruiting Georgia has done, that their receiving core is pedestrian, nothing close to being special. So Florida will be at 100% health for the first time all season. Kadarius Toney is back. Mm-hmm. Got injured in the first quarter against Miami, hasn't played since. Grenard and Zuniga are back. Mm-hmm. These guys can cause havoc off the edge against the run and the pass. It all comes down to DeAndre Swift. If he has a good game, Georgia's winning. If Florida keeps him to 70 yards or fewer, I think the Gators are going to win. Mullen, I think, is much more of a gunslinger than Smart is. I think Smart is sort of a 1980s kind of coach.
We're going to conservative.
Let's not beat ourselves. Whereas Mullen is, he coached for Urban Meyer for a while, 5 or 6 years as an OC at Utah and at Florida, and he's more of a risk taker. And I think Kadarius Toney being back, he is Florida's best big play threat by far. His first touch of this season was a 66-yard touchdown against Miami and only played about another half of a quarter. Now he's back. So all the Florida players, I don't know if this is gamesmanship or not, but every single Florida player, offensively and defensively, quoted this week is like, oh, my God, wait till you see KT on the field. So this is, granted I'm a Florida native. I went to Florida. But to me, when Florida and Georgia is an important game, it's a good thing for college football, just like when Oklahoma-Texas is a big game. It makes things more interesting and entertaining. I think the key is DeAndre Swift. I don't think Florida can keep him under 70 yards, so I think Georgia's going to win. But I would not be shocked if Florida wins. And you asked before about the coaching. If Dan Mullen finds a way to beat Kirby Smart in his second year at Florida, it's going to get very interesting for Kirby Smart.
Finally, we got to wait a whole nother week, but it's a revisit of the 2011 matchup, 1-2, LSU-Alabama. Just a snippet. Early thoughts on it?
Well, I think Tua's health. If he's going to play, we all know that. Is he 85% or is he 95%? Mm-hmm. I don't think either team's going to have that much success running the ball. Which is weird for an Alabama LSU game. Which secondary plays better? Which team gets the better pass rush? And going back to the first thing about running game, maybe because the pass offenses are so good, maybe the running offenses actually are more important. Because if you can break a couple big running plays, or if you can consistently gain positive yardage on first down when you do run, maybe that's enough. But this game, it's in Tuscaloosa. Hard to beat Alabama at Bryant-Denny. But this is the game of the year. Yep. And it's going to, the hype has already started. But the Tua's health is obviously going to be well reported on for the next 8 or 9 days. And that's going to be the most interesting aspect and the most important aspect.
In 10 seconds or less, if you were the producer of Game Day, would you go to Tuscaloosa or would you go to Minneapolis?
Oh, I'd go to Tuscaloosa.
Okay.
1-2. Though, Minnesota, it's a neat story. But, and I know it's going to be unbeaten teams, but I'd be in Tuscaloosa.
He is Michael Hugan of The Athletic. You're the best. Enjoy, what is this, week 10
week
of college
10,
that's football.
That's bad, isn't it? Man, it's almost over.
I know. We'll talk hoops soon. All right, thank you, Michael.
All right, talk next week. Thanks, man.
All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll put a finishing touch to this edition of the Jordy Helfrich Show. All right, finishing touches to this hump day edition. Let's go to our history lesson. It was on this day, October 30th, 1974, known as the Rumble in the Jungle. Using his rope-a-dope strategy, Muhammad Ali knocked out George Foreman in the eighth round in Zaire to win back the heavyweight title. If today is your birthday, All Halloween Eve, happy birthday to you. You share it with the likes of Devin Booker of Phoenix, the Suns, 23. Marcus Mariota, the Titans, is 26. The Hand of God, Diego Maradona, soccer stars, 59, and forever known only as the Fonz. Henry Winkler, 74 years old today. Special thanks to our guests, Chandler Rome, Chris Truax, Mikey Matuk, and Michael Huguenin. Who you got tonight, Astros or the Nationals? One game, winner take all, for the World Series Championship. We'll review that. We'll preview more of the Raging Cajuns in Texas State and everything else going on in the world of sports. We only have one of these Wednesdays. Hope you have a great afternoon and evening. Come on back tomorrow, same time, 2 to 4, same great station, 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com. Until then, I'm Jordy Helfrich. Stay thirsty, my friends. Stay thirsty.